All right, great to have you with us as we get game four today of the Giants and the Cardinals. Bruce Jenkins, good morning. Happy Mother's Day to you and the family. How are you?
Doing well. We're celebrating mom here today with our girls, and well-deserved. Very nice, and we got Sunday baseball on top of it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about baseball players and mothers. There's a real connection because, you know, the mothers would wash the uniforms and drive to the games and all this kind of stuff. I remember talking to Eric Chavez of the A's, who's now, heck, the bench coach. Where is it? I forget where he is.
He was with the Yanks. He moved on somewhere else. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I forgot.
But anyway, yeah.
But yeah, so he told me his mother used to, she was a very good softball player, and used to work him out in the backyard and taught him how to hit.
There's a lot of great stories about athletic moms playing a huge role, and also about, you know, moms who would take their kids to the games and not really knowing anything about baseball, but getting totally into it, you know, cheering for the kids. And, you know, you wind up going to other kids' games in your neighborhood because it's such a communal thing. And, you know, for my mom, who didn't know much about baseball, I think I may have told you this in the past, but we had Vin Scully on it every night without fail when the Dodgers moved west. And she became a baseball fan through him. Now, it could have been a lot of announcers. It wouldn't have had any effect on her. But he spoke about the game in such a lyrical manner and was so absolutely perfect that she became a fan through the radio and Vin Scully.
Boy, it's great. And, boy, so many announcers, Jack Buck. I mean, you go through this, so
yeah,
many.
Ernie Harwell.
Yeah. You know, just the Red Barber and just people who just made an influence in the community. It's a very special thing. You know, we haven't really talked about this. To be a baseball broadcaster, it's just so – I mean, the Giants have the best with Dave and John.
Yeah.
And even on the TV side. But the radio side, you are telling a story to people every single day, and it's really amazing, really.
There are parts of the country, sort of in the Midwest, leaning toward the east, where you can hear five different. If you've got a really powerful radio, you can hear five different broadcasts. You could hear Ernie Harwell. You could hear Jack Buck. You could hear Harry Carey. You know, and you could choose your team if you didn't have one in your immediate area. Remember hearing people talk about how wonderful that was.
You know, it's funny. We talked a little bit about the Hall of Fame committees yesterday, and we'll follow up on that on another weekend. But the Ford C. Frick Award, which is for broadcasting excellence, they're going to be 10 on the ballot now, and they're going to be 4 years in a row where you could vote for announcers from post-1994 because they want to get the current ones into the Hall of Fame. And then in the fifth year, you could consider people whose career ended before 1994. So I think they're trying to upgrade it so we can get guys in, maybe like a John Miller. Well, of course, he's in already. But, you know, people who are broadcasting now.
Well, I mean, there's been a push for getting Kruko and Kuiper in together.
Right, that's
which
a good one.
Which I think, yeah, I think that's just an automatic. Too many national baseball writers have said what we believe out here. You know, if they tune into as many games as they can, they hear the quick pitch calls, and they know that these guys are the best. I think the only comparable team would be, you know, Cohen and Keith Hernandez and Ron Darling with the Mets, who are just great. But Kruk and Kuiper are the best. They're an institution. You can't have one without the other. And it's not going to start a trend. You're not going to get two guys from the same booth going in. It could be 20 years before that happens again. But they're both very deserving. And if they go in together, that would certainly be great. It's wonderful that John Miller is in there. I don't think is Bill King in there. Bill King got into the
yes, of course. Ken
yeah,
Clark
he got into baseball.
Was...
Yeah, he's not in the basketball, which is complete farce, and football also a joke. But he is in baseball, which, you know, thank goodness he got in one of the halls. But so we've got a couple already, but we need a couple. Lon Simmons, but we need a couple more.
Yeah, I was thinking in the Bay Area, of course, Ken Korak, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah, there's another one, yeah.
Is fabulous.
Very deserving. Yeah.
And in New York, John Sterling, whether you like him or don't, he is a staple of New York baseball, and you're talking to, you know, 20 million people.
Yeah, he's been around a long time. He'll definitely come up, and, you know, they'll be playing, you know, Yankees. I don't know how that's cool, but somehow it has endured.
Well, it's part of, see, that's my point. It's part of the community.
It sounds like you're choking on a salad.
I know, but it's part of the community. It's part of what you wait for. Yes. It's like, really, it's part of the family, and that's what radio broadcasts do. And I love baseball on the radio. I was a kid. I used to listen to Armed Forces Radio growing up. And like you said, if I drive around in the car, I try to get the Reds game from New Orleans, had a station with the Cincinnati Reds on it. So it's a great part of baseball, and it comes up on Mother's Day because it kind of makes it connects the family again.
It really does. And, you know, when I was growing up, and a lot of Giants fans were the same thing, I'm down south, but the only televised games were from Candlestick. That was it. So it was a radio experience. And, you know, for the Giants fans, getting to hear, you know, Lon and Russ Hodges, and then, you know, onward through the years, as great as great broadcasters. And it just, I hear from so many people who say, you know, I know Kruk and Kipe are great, but I just love the radio. I love to just have it on as a backdrop. Maybe you're sitting there and listening, you know, you're dying and living and dying with every pitch, or maybe you're just outside in the garden, or you're doing the dishes, or it's on. It's a backdrop, and you know, you can tell when the good announcers know when to raise their voice at the proper time, and you know it's time to really check in with what's going on.
Yeah, that's what fun of the pregame and when I did the postgame. Because it gave people that chance to do things around the house. They'd be cooking, and we'd do 3 hours of a pregame, and then all of a sudden after the game, we're on for 3 or 4 hours of people just, you know, relaxing and doing stuff around the house. So I like that part of it. It's always been very special for me.
Yeah, and as you say, after the games, you know, back then it was a quick maybe you get a quick interview and they'd go off the air. But now with the extended post-game shows and the fans weighing in, you can keep that radio thread going, you know, into the evening.
Yeah, dialogue. The baseball dialogue is the key of making it happen. All right. You did mention Candlestick. And, you know, our good friend Mike Pechner, remember him, the weatherman?
Sure.
Yeah, so he sends me a text every once in a while. He says the winds today at the ballpark could gust up to 35. And
today?
It made me think of Candlestick, and it also made me think of Wrigley Field. Have you been in Wrigley Field with the wind blowing out? And if you have, what's that like?
Yeah, I have. I've had it both ways, where it's blowing in, and you can't do a darn thing. But yeah, it's amazing. But when it's blowing out, and you know that's the case in batting practice, and then you get a couple of real life examples in the early innings when the fly ball just simply sails out of the yard, and it just changes so many things. I mean, the pitcher, if you have a fly ball pitcher, you know, good luck. You're probably get lucky to get through the fourth inning. You know, a sinker ball guys are going to be doing a lot. He'd be a lot better off. You see guys maybe changing their swings to try to get more loft when it's not their natural, you know, approach. But you just can't help it. If you see a fly ball go out of the yard, you want to be part of that. And I've seen some wild, you know, 12-10 games when that was going on. And, you know, I love it. I'd love any ballpark that has a quirk to it, whether it has weird dimensions or the climate plays such a big factor. I just think that's great. The more difference you get, the better for me.
Well, that's what makes baseball special.
Yeah.
All the ballparks, just the way they're constructed, are different. Now, you don't, a football field is 100 yards and, you know, so wide. A basketball court, a hockey, you know, rink.
Yeah.
But baseball, you can have the craziest stuff. And now they're back to that. The, you know, that HOK architecture thing brought back, you know, the old stadiums. But, you know, because you had to build a stadium on three city blocks.
So, yeah,
you know,
that,
all of a sudden you had, you know, the left field wall was in someone's, you know, backyard.
Yeah, and just right now with the, you know, the talk about that the ball has been dead in a little bit. It's a real big issue in Dodger Stadium, and we've seen it at Oracle. But you know, Cincinnati is a home run hitter's park, and just yesterday balls are flying out of there. I mean, don't sound the alarms on the deadened ball. It's not happening. So, you know, a good hitter's park is always going to be that way, and the pitcher's parks will work that way.
All right, I'm going to direct your attention to an ESPN article that came out a few days ago about runs down and this and that. But, you know, we'll see. You know, Leonard Copit always said, let's see it over the course of a year.
Yeah.
And see what it goes. So we'll do that. But we had Posey Day yesterday. How did you feel about that? Did you get to see some of it?
You know what? I have it on tape. We had some people over to watch the Warriors, and then when that was over, we watched the actual game. And next thing you know, it's 11 o'clock, and well, let's watch Posey tomorrow when we have time to really let it soak in. So I didn't have it, but it's sitting there on my TV ready to be watched tonight. Yeah.
Very well done, and he made a
really nice speech.
Yeah. And, you know, what we talked about yesterday, and you really nailed it on this golden era of baseball, and I expanded it a little bit more to Brian Sabian, but he went through the championships and the highlights and the moments, and it just makes you emotional to hear it again and bring those feelings back. And he did that in a speech. He did a nice job with that.
Yeah. I did see a couple of the interviews beforehand, you know, Jeremy Affeldt trying to put into words, you know, what it was that made Posey so great, and he was very eloquent about it, you know, trying to capture his legacy. You know, Posey was such basically a quiet guy who was a leader by example and by his words, you know, behind the scenes. Not, you know, when you walked into the locker room after the game, you didn't see Posey doing, you know, blustery leadership things, going around to guys. You may not see him at all. You know, Affeldt said, when this guy really spoke up, you probably hadn't heard anything like that in 2 months. I said, man, everybody pays attention, and it was something you really needed to hear. And just, you know, the fact that in every phase of the game, you know, except for base stealing, he was excellent. He had his ups and downs as a hitter, but he was basically a very pure hitter. I remember when he came up, and people were saying, you know, well, we know this guy can hit. It's just a matter of, is he really going to be able to catch? Because he hadn't been catching for that long, you know, in college, and turns out to be one of the great catchers of all time. So, yeah, the tributes came forth. You could have another one with a whole another group, and it'd be just as good.
Yeah, I think Crawford gets a tribute. I think he's next up when his career's over.
Absolutely.
I think he deserves a day. Maybe not as emotional as this one with Posey, but Craw deserves a day, and I think the fans will love it.
Oh, absolutely. And whoever's in town, hopefully it's a veteran shortstop who can talk about how other shortstops in the big leagues feel about Crawford, watching him play. Because it's just so magical, and it's not like watching a guy like Iglesias or you know, Ray Sanchez was unbelievable, Ozzie Smith or Vizquel. It's not quite that fancy, but it's so reliable, and you know, the quickness and the range, reactions are all there, and you know, coming through when it really matters. You know, a big play with the place going crazy on the road in a playoff game, and he's had so many moments, and like Posey, great moments with the bat too.
You know, catchers become managers. You know, pitchers generally don't. But the catchers become managers because they have the whole game in front of them. They've got to deal with the pitching, hitting, and everything else. So they're more in tune, I think, with the whole game. I think Posey could be a good manager. I really do. And I said this to Woe this morning. He gets so much respect that if he walked into a clubhouse, yeah, who's going to challenge Buster Posey? And I think he could be a good manager.
Well, there's no doubt, and you know, he's got that way about him. You know, you can't be just, you know, 110% adrenaline, let's go all the time, or you can't be like perennial scowl on your face either. You got to have your timing. He's got that. He's sort of like, you know, remember Walt Alston was like that. You know, he was pretty stoic, but he had the utmost respect, and the players never tuned him out. I suspect it won't happen until Buster's kids grow up because he's such a family guy. Mm-hmm. But he might get the bug after that.
Yeah, I think he'd be very good at it. He says he wants to continue with the Giants in some capacity, which would be good to keep him connected to the game. Well, the Giants are 15-12. The Dodgers won a doubleheader yesterday, and the Padres got beat by, I think, the best pitcher in the league, Pablo Lopez. I'll say it again. The guy is he had one bad game. He's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Colorado came back and four in the ninth off Mark Melanson. He had two out and two strikes, and they scored four runs off him and to beat Arizona. And then, of course, you had the Giants 13-7 over St. Louis. So my point is this: we've seen 27 games. Do you have a feeling about this West right now? And it's really a pretty good division.
Oh, that's really good. I don't think we've seen anything from the Dodgers or San Diego to dissuade us from the feeling that that's the top, you know, those are the top two teams. They simply are. No matter how enamored you are with the Giants, as we see it right now, those are clearly the two best teams. The Giants looked very familiar yesterday. I think Kruko said something about, no, this is the team that we remember, you know. And Colorado, I don't know. They're 16-11. They got a one game lead on the Giants right now, and you know, it's not just Blackmon, but they have C.J. Krohn and Grichuk and Connor Joe, and Daniel Bard's been a good closer. And mm-hmm. They didn't even have Chris Bryant for several days. He's been out with a back injury, but they look really dangerous. I don't see any reason why they can't keep pace with the Giants. Arizona has been up and down. I don't think they hang. But it's kind of a 2-2 with the Dodgers in San Diego, and we'll see about Colorado and the Giants. But you know, it's not nothing's getting away from anybody right now. So I like a real. It could be four teams. Who knows?
Who knows? But it won't be as much of a runaway if you don't have two teams like Colorado and Arizona that are awful. It
right,
becomes
yeah.
a much more interesting division, which I think it's going to be a good summer of baseball. I will say this about Arizona, Bruce. Their starting rotation with this Merrill Kelly and Bumgarner,
yeah.
and the guy who goes today, Zach Gallen,
mm-hmm.
and Castellanos they've got, their starting rotation is one of the best in baseball right now.
Yeah, and that's going to keep them in it. I think they're right around 500. You know, they're not sinking deep in any holes, you know, where they can't get out of. And Bumgarner, oddly enough, despite that unfortunate incident with the umpires, is off to maybe the best start of his career. I mean, nobody notices it, but he's been great. So he's anchoring that staff. You know, for his sake, I'd love to see Arizona stay part of this thing because he's such a competitor, and it's such a drag to be part of a team that doesn't matter, you know. And sometimes in Arizona, the crowds are up and down. You know, they don't have the fanatic fan base because people are coming to Arizona from so many different parts of the country, and it doesn't remind him, you know, of some of the scenes that he's been part of. But I'd love to see them be in it.
Wouldn't it be nice, of course – the other example is they were like 3-14 or whatever it was, you know, and all of a sudden now they're 14-14, you know. It just shows you it's a long season. It's a great
yeah.
example of how long the season really is. One thing about Colorado, Thomas Harding of MLB.com will be on with us later this morning, but I happen to notice one of the things, their on-base percentage is second in the National League, and that's, you know, so that's
yep.
something for and you name the players. They have a pitcher, Chad Kuhl. Remember him, K-U-H-L, from Pittsburgh?
Not pitching, at all cool as a person, oddly enough. But
he's
no,
pitching
no.
great. I mean, they, you know, all of a sudden, yeah. You know, and they've got a rotation too. So that's the West. That's the
yes.
West. But in New York,
division.
In New York, they get rained out a lot, but they've got two today with the Phillies. They've got Bassett and Scherzer going.
Oh, yeah.
Against Kyle Gibson and someone, a new pitcher they're bringing in, the Phillies, a lefty. But how'd you like the Mets with 7-9 and Buck Showalter? And I got an email, you may have gotten it as well, from a fellow in Virginia who listens to us, said, well, the last time the Mets scored 7-9 to win a game, Willie Mays got the biggest hit in 1973. So
wow.
I thought that was pretty good. But let's talk Mets a little bit.
Yeah, Mets, they appear to be so for real. There's just a live wired, you know, atmosphere around that team. Scherzer makes an incredible difference. Lindor is an electrifying presence. He's been kind of up and down, and he didn't have that old spirit that we saw in Cleveland, but now he's going off. Alonso, great power hitter. Bassett's been a great addition for them. Diaz is a hell of a closer. And they just think they're gonna win,
mm-hmm.
and they're winning against the odds, time after time, and I've been taping the Mets all season because of that broadcasting crew, as I mentioned primarily, but now the team itself, I mean anybody could be calling the games, and that team is just super fun to watch.
Yeah, they are fun. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Jeff McNeil is having the
yeah.
big year again. I listen to Howie Rose and Wayne Randazzo
uh-huh.
on the radio. Howie Rose, I love, and it's like
yeah.
Gary Cohen. I grew up with New York baseball, and
mm-hmm.
And I like to listen to Howie Rose on that one. So yeah, we're going to follow the Mets a little more closely. Hey, historically, very big day today, May the 8th, and it is a day of Catfish Hunter. believe it or not, Bruce. And what a day he had, Catfish Hunter.
Yeah, 1968. It was the A's' first year out here. And he's facing the Twins, and who should be leading off for the Twins that day? Cesar Tovar. Mm. Now, this guy, over the course of his career, had the only hit against five different pitchers, including one season he broke up Cuellar and then McNally in the ninth inning. The only hit off both of those guys. And he did it to five guys, one of whom was Catfish Hunter later on, like in 1975, Tovar's with Texas. He gets the only hit off Catfish. It was in the sixth inning, but he did this five times. So he's leading off that day, followed by Carew, Killebrew, and Oliva. So, I mean, this is a hell of a – it's a day game at the Coliseum. There's like 6,000 people there. And, Tovar didn't get the hit, but Catfish got three hits, which I love. He was a pretty good hitter. He got a two-run single off Piranowski, who was with the Twins then, and Catfish gets the win. But yeah, I love Catfish. I mean, without Charlie Finley, he's Jimmy Hunter. Jimmy Hunter was a kid from North Carolina, grew up on a farm, you know, driving an old Ford truck around, even when he's making millions of dollars. He's Jimmy Hunter. But Charlie Finley, who loved to put nicknames on people, he once offered Vita Blue $2,000 if he changed his name to True. I mean, nope. Wow, what a horrible idea. But with Catfish, he goes, you know, Jimmy, I think there's a story about you where you ran away from home one day to go fishing and you brought back some catfish, and we're going to call you Catfish. Wow. And it's kind of had a ring to it, and he went with it. But without Finley, he's Jimmy Hunter.
I love it. Well, the perfect game. He pitched a perfect game that day against the Twins, and I remember talking to Ted Ulander, who was part of the Twins. He said that day batting practice was thrown to us by Stu Miller. The changeup, the guy who threw, you know, the Bugs Bunny changeup about 50 miles an hour. He says we were all messed up. And then I ran into Rene Latchman last week, who was the catcher, and he grew up with Catfish. And he said he and Catfish were the youngest battery ever in baseball. I think one was 19 and one was 17 at the time for Kansas City. But he said on that day, Catfish came in the seventh inning and said, "All right, everybody, I know what's going on. Don't worry about it." And he did. He had three hits that day. What a special, special player he was, Catfish Hunter.
Yeah, you know, there was so much bombast to the A's, especially as they started winning, and you know, larger-than-life personalities and fights and everything. But they were really the essence of that team was guys like Bando and Rudy, and especially, you know, Catfish Hunter, who was just a rock in the rotation. You know, he idolized Robin Roberts growing up, who was a master of the complete game. And Catfish threw 181 of them, Marty. He had 30 complete games one season.
Wow.
Yeah, and he came back the next season and had a whole bunch more. You know, and that's how much wear and tear it was on his arm. But a really solid guy, Jimmy Hunter.
Very good. Perfect game on today's day.
Perfect
good
game. Yeah, I guess I should have mentioned that.
Yeah, Ray Fossey. No, Ray Fossey's best friend, one of his best friends. So, yeah, that's a good one. Well, boy, enjoy the day. You got a good day coming up. Jake Junis. And Dakota Hudson and maybe a little wind at the ballpark, so we'll see what happens. But have a great day, Bruce. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, you too, Marty. Thanks a million.
All right, that is Bruce Jenkins. More coming up. We have a very interesting interview coming up next with Kostya Kennedy, very, very famous author. And he wrote a book about Jackie Robinson. It's called True, The Four Seasons of Jackie Robinson. Where do you hear this one? Very good. All right, more coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5, the Sports Leader.